know what that sound means. It's another exciting installment of the Fan Brawl Season podcast, where we talk local sports, both the Atlanta Pro franchises, like the Braves, Hawks, Falcons, and we also talk the University of Georgia Bulldogs. So strap in, guys. It's another exciting episode about to start right now. What up, podcast land? It's your host, Jam and Joe, of the Fan for All Seasons podcast. On this week's episode, episode 264 of the Fan for All Seasons podcast, we're going to talk some University of Georgia athletics. We're going to talk some Atlanta Braves and spring training. We're also going to talk some Atlanta Falcons. We'll also get into a variety of other topics on this week's episode. But before we get into the sports conversation this week, guys, it's time to get a word from our sponsor. And Fan for All Seasons is brought to you in part by Georgia Smoke Barbecue, authentic original oak smoked barbecue catering. You can learn more at georgiasmoke.com. So with me across the way, for his second consecutive week on the pod, the man, the myth, the legend, my dad. Dad, welcome back.
Joe, it's great to be back. We had a terrific weekend, and it's always great talking sports with you.
No doubt. Dad, back-to-back weeks, you're getting kind of used to this whole co-host shtick, huh?
Joe, I'm living the dream.
Living the dream on a podcast run by your son. That's pretty cool.
It is. It is.
So, Dad, we are going to start out the show. There was some sad news that came across the wire, I guess, early Sunday evening, would you say? We found out the news. NFL, ESPN, former beat writer for the Braves, actually, and the Atlanta Falcons of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Chris Mortensen, passed away today at age 73 from a long, long battle with cancer. Our thoughts and prayers are with the Mortensen family. Chris was an outstanding reporter. He was kind of the one that really got the whole guys like Adam Schefter and guys like, you know, Woj and Jeff Passan and, you know, all those other big-time reporters at the Four Letter Network. He was kind of the gold standard for that. I always enjoyed Chris Mortensen's bit that he would do on a certain Atlanta radio station every week. And he always gave great insight. And I've heard him on several podcasts, you know, whether it be Matt Chernoff, who does Atlanta radio. He did a one-on-one interview or conversation with him about, you know, his career and his upbringing. And he talked about how Mortensen covered the Braves early on in his reporting career when he first got to Atlanta. So definitely a tough day in the sports world. Chris Mortensen will definitely be missed. Wouldn't you say, Dad?
Absolutely, Joe. To me, my earliest recollection of Chris Mortensen was when he was a Falcon beat writer. And boy, he was so much better at his job than everybody else who covered the team. I think he had developed some strong relationships with coaches and players, and he really gave you insight. And if you were trying to figure out exactly what was going on, Mortensen was, and that was just reading him in the newspaper. It was several years later before I actually ever saw him in person or heard him speak. But just reading him in the Atlanta newspaper, I was always, he set himself apart from everyone else. And then over the years, as you got to know him, he seemed like a good guy, you know, who treated people fairly and, and then we've listened to him as he's battled cancer, which is certainly not easy, but with his light going out today, it's a sad day for all of us.
Definitely. So our thoughts and prayers are with the Mortensen family, and Chris will be missed. Before we get into more current topics on the show, I do want to give a shout out to Caitlin Clark, the Iowa guard, she made history. She passed Pete Maravich today, the all-time leading scorer in men's and women's basketball. Congratulations, Miss Clark.
Joe, I've always been very impressed with her. She seems to really value her teammates. She seems to really enjoy playing college basketball, and that sense of joy, you know, it comes right through the TV as you're watching her. I've always been very impressed by her, and I know there are people out there saying Pete Maravich didn't have the benefit of the three-point shot, and he only played 3 years. But Caitlin Clark, I mean, all she did was the best she could given the circumstances that surrounded her. So I salute her. I don't want to get caught up in the, is this better than what Pete did, and da da da. You know, Pete Maravich was a great player when I was young, I really celebrated him and his talents. And Caitlin Clark now, is certainly had a career worth celebrating, and wish her all the best going forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, and I did hear the other day she did declare for the WNBA draft. I think the Indiana Fever have the number one pick. So
you think they might take her, Jeff?
I think they might. And so what's cool about that is, you know, with her playing ball at Iowa, she gets to stay in the Midwest somewhat. And, you know, I mean, Caitlin Clark may be the most lightning rod for college sports, period, you know, in quite some time.
Yeah, she really set herself apart. And, I think she had a terrific career. And, as I said before, I wish her the best.
Absolutely.
Now, Joe, I want to ask you about something.
What's up?
It came across the wire that your high school, that you were a high school letterman at,
yes,
lifted the big trophy in the state Georgia Independent School Association basketball tournament. Tell me about that, Joe.
GISA AA state champs, Monsignor Donovan Catholic High School, brought home the trophy to Athens. I was scrolling through my Facebook Saturday morning, and I was going through, and then all of a sudden I see, you know, we're bringing a state title back to Athens, and I see, and I'm thinking, oh, this is Clark Central or Cedar Shoals or something like that, and I see Donovan, and I'm like, what? Congratulations to those guys, seriously.
Absolutely. I'm so happy for the Rams, and last year they made a run right into the final game and came up a little bit short, but you know, they hitched their wagon, you know, their britches up and got after it, and made it across the finish line this year. So congratulations to the Rams. So we're really proud of them.
Absolutely, yeah. Props to those guys, the Monsignor Donovan. Like you said, I played there all 4 years. The big highlight was getting to play in Phillips Arena.
Oh, by the way, Joe, did you make any shots in Phillips Arena?
I did. So what was unique about that game, we had a tough night, and coach put me in, and I just ran in the corner and caught the ball. And I caught it, and I let it fly, and I'm on 1 foot, and I launch it in, and, you know, nothing but net. And I felt like I was 10 feet tall. I really did. And I kept thinking to myself, you know, a lot of great players have scored on this goal. Like, you know, Allen Iverson, Kobe Bryant, you know, Joe Johnson of the Hawks, you know, all these great players of the past. So it's really, really cool to, you know, kind of be in that kind of light and get to play on such an incredible place like Phillips Arena. I still can't believe we had that opportunity, and I know, and I'm sure a lot of my teammates would say the same thing. That's got to be one of the highlights of, you know, my life for darn sure.
Well, Joe, the words of your high school coach, Coach Will Mayer, ring in my ear. You know, sometimes the kids on the second team were a little reluctant to shoot, but when the ball found its way to Joe Killeen, he never met a shot he wouldn't take. I was really proud of you your whole career, but I was really proud of you that night when you caught that ball in the corner and went right up with it, and it went straight to the bottom of the net. So That's a great memory for you. I know it's one you'll always treasure, but all of your family will also carries that around, and we will never forget that afternoon in Phillips Arena.
No doubt. Yeah, shout out to my boy Alejandro Clark. He was there too, you guys, along with Uncle Kev and everybody. And so that was definitely one for the history books, no doubt.
Absolutely. Great memory.
So, Dad, let's get back to more of the sports conversation here. We're going to get things started with some Georgia athletics. Let's get it started with the Bulldog baseball team. This was the annual Clean Old Fashioned Hate Series, Georgia and the North Avenue Trade School in Atlanta. And Georgia handled its business for the most part on Friday. I mean, granted, the weather Friday afternoon in Atlanta and around the state was just horrific. Just bad rain. But, you know, the North Avenue Trade School, they wanted to host. They wanted to play Georgia. I get it. You know, but the conditions were horrible. Georgia found a way, and Georgia was leading 9-3, and it was about to go to the top of the fifth inning. The umpires and the two head coaches got together, and they came to the conclusion that due to poor conditions that the game was to be suspended and will eventually be made up at the North Avenue Trade School field later on this year. The difficult thing is trying to find a time when that game will be scheduled. So as it currently stands, when that game is ever made up, Georgia's leading 9-3 going in the fifth inning. Charlie Condon on Saturday was just outstanding. He played third base Saturday. He made a couple great plays in the field. Had a diving play at third base on a hot smash at the hot corner. And then had an incredible play defensively again. He fielded the ball. Actually dove to third base to get a huge out. You know, Charlie Condon, I'm telling you guys, if you get a chance to watch this guy, he's incredible. He's the best player in college baseball. He does it on both sides of the ball. He can play anywhere. He can play third. He can play first. He can play outfield. And he is a home run hitting machine. I believe he has 8 home runs. He's second in college baseball in home runs behind the Tech kid who hit 4 home runs the other day against Georgia State. Charlie Condon, again, is just incredible. And again, Georgia found a way to beat Tech in Athens on Saturday, March the 2nd. And then earlier today, on the 3rd of March, Georgia rallied to beat the North Avenue Trade School 11-9. Georgia was down the whole game. Georgia scored 5 runs in the 7th. And then that guy again, Fernando Gonzalez, the do-it-all catcher, who you could argue, if Coach Johnson was sitting here with us, Dad, Coach Johnson would say the second most important player back for the Georgia Bulldogs, other than Charlie Condon, was Fernando Gonzalez. If you have a senior catcher, that's huge in college baseball. Gonzalez had a huge double, scored Josh Stinson, and Georgia got the lead and never looked back. And Georgia's pitching was aces again, you know, later in the game. And Georgia found a way to beat Tech 11-9. So as of now, the sports sweep of Tech is in effect. Georgia beat Tech in football. Georgia beat Tech in men's hoops, which I'm still so, so proud of. And the baseball team has taken 2 of 3 from the North Avenue Trade School. It doesn't get much better than that as a Georgia guy, beating Tech like that.
You're right, Joe. It never gets old. And they are like the pesky little brother to the big brother who keeps wanting to act like they're good enough and belong, but they're not good enough and they don't belong.
They don't belong. Seriously, if you ever consult with a Tech fan, Tech people want to be Georgia so bad, and they have this obsession over the University of Georgia. It's ridiculous. They want to be us so bad, and they just never will be.
Well, and I don't take it for granted, because at my age, I've seen them win less than their share, but enough. But I enjoyed. There's nothing like it. No matter what the sport
nothing
is.
Like it. It's great. Like it. It's the best great. Feeling in the world. And if you lose to them, it's the worst feeling in the world. It is. It's awful. It's awful. It's but that's what makes it a rivalry. And everybody talks about it as clean old-fashioned hate. There's nothing clean about it. It's just pure hatred.
Well,
it's just pure hatred.
You know, in general, I enjoy watching the Kansas City Chiefs, but every time I see that kicker, Harrison Butker,
I just cringe.
Yeah, because the last time Tech beat Georgia, he kicked a long field goal as time expired to beat Georgia. And I think the guy is a terrific kicker, and I really appreciate his talents, but I don't appreciate what he did to us that afternoon. But anyways, we've...
But as we digress...
We've had our way with them, and it's always fun.
But it's a huge win for Coach Johnson, too. I'm so proud of him and so proud of the Dogs because earlier in the week, Georgia played Michigan State, as we mentioned. Michigan State came into Athens and really took Georgia behind the woodshed. I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. Georgia ended up losing 19-6 in that game. Once again, Charlie Condon smashed 3 home runs, you know. Just a typical night in the yard for Charlie Condon. I think his batting average right now is like .568, something like that. I mean, it's stupid what Charlie Condon's doing.
Well, Joe, he's a terrific player, and I'm so glad he's back and playing for the Bulldogs. He's had a great career, and I expect that he'll finish it off with a super strong season here, and he'll be drafted very high.
I just keep thinking, I know it could never happen, but what if the Braves found a way to get Charlie?
He'd be
could you imagine Charlie Condon and Ronald Acuna and Matt Olson?
Well, Charlie's still got a ways to go, but he's got a very bright future, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
His stock is so high. I could talk about that kid for hours. Anyway, that's what it looks like for the Georgia Bulldog baseball team. The Dogs this week travel to SRP Park in North Augusta to take on the Georgia Southern Eagles. In the midweek this week, it's also Georgia's spring break. So Georgia, after playing Georgia Southern at SRP, will then host Northern Colorado for a 4-game series. So Friday's game is at 5 o'clock. Saturday is a doubleheader. Game 1 is at 1 o'clock. Game 2 is at 5 o'clock. And then Sunday's game on the 10th of March is at 1 o'clock at Foley Field in Athens, Georgia. That's what it looks like for the Georgia Bulldog baseball team. You know what's interesting about Northern Colorado? The one claim to fame they have? That Tennessee guard, Dalton Kinect. That's where he came from.
How about that?
That's the one claim to fame Northern Colorado has. The ex-school of Dalton Kinect. That's crazy.
It'll be fun, you know, to see a team that you never get to see, and who knows what type of pitching they have.
No,
that's really the big thing. I mean, you can look at records and rosters, but if on a given day, if you have a hot pitcher or a talented pitcher, it could change the whole complexion of the game.
I mean, that's what we thought with Northern Kentucky a few weeks ago. And those dudes just smashed.
They did.
Dudes did was hit. So if you're in the Athens area, if you're starving for some baseball, come on down to Foley Field. It's the Wrigley Field of the SEC, the most beautiful, quaint little stadium in all the Southeastern Conference. Come check out a game at Foley Field. One last point. This is the last non-conference series before we get to SEC play. The Dogs open up SEC play at Kentucky coming up next weekend. I don't know why the SEC thought it'd be a good idea for cold weather Kentucky to start out hosting, you know, games at home. That's ridiculous. It's going to be freezing cold. I can think back to listening to Dave and Jeff, and, you know, they're talking about the wind chill being, you know, really, really low, and guys are bundled up and can't really feel their hands, you know. If they put on their gloves and if they get up, and when they get up to bat, and the guys are like freezing, you know, standing in home plate. Come on, SEC, be better than that.
I hear you.
Be better than that.
It leaves you scratching your
head. It does. It really does. So that's gonna wrap it up for our Georgia Bulldog baseball part of the show. Dad, we're going to keep it with the Georgia Athletics talk. We're going to round it out with some UGA basketball as the Dogs had a tough week, losing to LSU by one. That was horrible. The referees ate their whistles on that last possession. And then Georgia coming back home in a winnable game in Athens and kind of falling on their face. 70-56 to A&M.
Well, the thing about that game kind of typifies what's happened this year. Georgia plays very well for the first 30 minutes, which is three-fourths of the game. And then the last 10 minutes of many of the SEC games have not been good to Georgia. And I don't know if it's depth or conditioning or what, but they've really seemed to struggle. Or it could be lack of experience, you know, lack of playing time for some of your key players. But it's been tough to watch Georgia struggle as you go, you know, head down the home stretch. And that's sort of what happened last night, because that was a very close, winnable game until the very end.
At halftime, it was 34-32. You know, Georgia was playing well. I got to give props to Silas Demery. He played really well once again. And, you know, a nugget about Silas I want to bring up. You realize he's the only SEC player to start every game for his team?
I didn't realize that, Joe. That's interesting. That both, you know, that's an achievement, because it's a long grind and it beats you up both physically and mentally. And for a freshman to do that, that's really commendable.
I think his future is very, very bright. Another freshman who played really well, we saw Blue Kane really take over in the second half. We saw Blue really, really look for his shot. Although Georgia, as a team, only shot like 28% from three-point land. It was a rough night shooting the ball. But we did see Blue drive to the basket and be aggressive. And I think that aggressiveness and control with the ball in his hands is only going to get better. He and Silas both. I think, as I've said before on numerous pods, you guys have heard me say, and I know, Dad, I know you'll agree with it. You'll agree with this take, that those two are the two biggest keys going into next season.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you want to see him grow and develop. And I think Coach has done a nice job with the team. That they got off to a very hot start. But, you know, it might be the fact you have these key players who are freshmen who kind of faded a little down the stretch, but there is something to build on. I'm looking forward to watching the program develop.
No doubt. As far as the rest of the team, it was senior night Saturday night, so a lot of seniors did get recognized, like Noah Thomason, like Jabri Abdur-Rahim, like Frank Ansel-Amibe, like Russell Chiwa, like Matthew Alexander Moncrief, like RJ Sinahara. Now, some of these guys do have eligibility to come back, but some of them will leave Georgia. You know, I just commend this group of seniors coming, especially those with like 1 year, like Russell and Noah. Like those two, to me, from when I look back at the senior class, like those two to me, when they look back at their time at Georgia, like they're gonna, like you know, like I did in high school, you know, laying the foundation at Donovan. Like, I think Russell and Noah are going to look back at their time in Georgia and think, you know, we laid the foundation for what Georgia basketball can ultimately become.
I agree, Joe. And I think both you and I have memories of Noah, you know, with his three-point shot when it's cooking, you know, and the confidence that he has. Mm-hmm. It's really fun to watch. And then the big guy in there, that kid works so hard and hustles, and he really gives you everything he has. I think Coach Weidel is going to miss them, but has really appreciated their contributions to the program.
I do want to talk about one Bulldog that I kind of don't really have an explanation for, and it's Jabri Abdur-Rahim. Does he seem like kind of been off to you, like ever since the Kentucky game, all the way back in January? Because he seems off to me. In Tennessee, or against Tennessee, in early January, right when SEC play started, he was confident. He was looking for a shot. He was making shots. He was even attacking the basket some. His free throw shooting has never wavered. I mean, he's one of the top percentage guys in Georgia history, 85%. But Jabri Abdur-Rahim, he kind of looks lost here down the stretch.
Well, Joe, I concur with you. I we didn't get from him what we thought we would get, and there's still time. There's two games left in the SEC tournament, and I'm hoping that maybe he could catch fire, because as a three-point shooter, it's hot and cold. But he certainly has the ability to be a very effective three-point shooter, but he didn't really seem very aggressive about trying to get his shot. And, three-point shooters that are passive don't really, unfortunately, there isn't a lot of upside there. So hopefully they can get it figured out and he can finish on a high.
Hopefully. So that leads me to, where does Georgia go from here? Georgia plays its final home game of the regular season Tuesday night in Athens against the Ole Miss Rebels. So that's going to be interesting, because they're coached by Chris Beard, the ex-Texas coach. That's going to be an interesting matchup.
And our coach is an alumnus of Ole Miss. So
that's correct. So Mike White probably has a little bit of something for this game coming up. You know, being an alumnus of Ole Miss.
Be fun. And then Saturday we get to go visit your favorite coach.
Ugh. We visit Two Mascot University inside that middle school gym. It's like a middle schoolish, high schoolish gym. It is so small. I've been there. It is very tiny. Now, granted, when I was there, Auburn was awful. And, like, there's a great story that I'm going to tell. I went with my boy RG3. For those of you that know, RG3 is an Auburn guy. So he took me to one of the games, and we got there so early that we saw the Georgia guys warming up, and we were right down low where, like, I could yell at the Georgia guys warming up. And this was around the time of, like, Charles Mann, Kenny Gaines, Yontae Mayton was there, like, as a freshman, and I'm yelling at these guys, and I'm dapping up Scott and Chuck, you know. And Chuck Dowdle looks at me and goes, "You're brave wearing the Georgia gear down here." And I was like, "Chuck, you got to represent, baby. Go Dogs." So yeah, I'm 1-1 inside Auburn Arena. I've seen a Georgia victory and I've seen a Georgia loss. So 1-1 inside that place. It is a neat place to watch a basketball game. And what it's become.
In fairness, they're very talented and they're playing very well. It's a tough place for the visiting team.
It is a tough
place.
And what it's become. Like I was about to say, it's truly become one of the most, like, ferocious places to play in college basketball. It really has. So hopefully the Dogs can go down there, maybe give Auburn a run for its money and make it interesting coming up on Saturday. The SEC tournament starts next Wednesday night. We'll find out the tournament seedings after regular season play, and there'll be the SEC tournament for the Georgia Bulldog basketball team. So, Dad, that's going to wrap it up for our Georgia Bulldog basketball part of the show. So, we're going to leave Georgia Athletics. We're going to keep the round ball combo talking. We're going to talk some Atlanta Hawks. Dad, I thought the Hawks were going to be better without Trey. Or at least that's what the media told us, right?
Well, with basketball, you're hot or you're cold. I mean, the first couple games without them, they really looked good, and they were playing good teams.
They were.
Orlando is a good
team. Orlando's good. And Utah's a pretty good team. You know, you look at that collection of talent.
Right.
That Walker Kessler from Auburn is a problem.
But, the Brooklyn Nets took two in a row.
You mean the Fighting Nicholas Claxtons took two in a row.
Granted, both games were on their home floor, but that's disappointing that you couldn't at least get a split out of that.
So I got a stat for you. Did you know that the Atlanta Hawks are 2-8 in their last 10 road games? 2-8. I get there's no Trey, but, like, come on.
Well, Trey played some of those games.
He did. He did play some of those games, but, like.
So that's not it. What it is the NBA is tough. The way the game is officiated, it makes you scratch your head. It's like they want to outlaw defense.
Right.
And
like we've talked about on numerous pods when it comes to the Hawks, defense is about effort and desire. And you just don't see it from the Hawks. You really don't on a consistent basis.
You don't.
I was listening to that Hawks-Nets game Thursday night. The great Steve Holman was, you know, getting on him about playing defense. And I'm just like, I mean, at some point, like, doesn't the bell have to go off that these guys got to play defense? But I got to call out one Hawk in particular. Clint Capela is not getting it done. He's just not. I'm hoping next year that Capela is no longer a Hawk. He's really, really losing favor with me. And I get it. He's older now. The Hawks, once again, mismanaged their funds, and they decided to G up Capela. I wasn't in favor of that. And I'll say this, too. They really miss Okongwu. They really do. Because Okongwu gives you that. He's able to bang down low, but he gives you that ability to stretch out and shoot the ball.
And he's a young guy with, you know, a little more pep in his step.
He does. And again, like we mentioned last week, I commend our boy Bruno Fernando. He's giving everything he's got.
You can't complain about his effort. I mean, I think you get everything out of him that he's got. And so I'm really happy to see that.
I am too. And I will say the rookie Kobe Bufkin, you know, made some plays and has looked good at times. We know he can score the ball. He's made some nice passes. I was watching some of the game on Saturday before the Georgia game. He made a really nice thread-the-needle pass between a defender to Bogey for a layup. I was really impressed with that. You know, Bogey's as professional as they come. I love Bogey. Yeah, the DeJounte Murray and Coach Snyder, like, it's all, like, DeJounte Murray's the guy right now. Like, that's who this team looks to. And he was supposed to be, or this all-world defensive guard, I should say. And he's not getting it done. He's supposed to be able to make things easy defensively. Capela's supposed to be able to erase shots. I will say this. We've also dogged on DeAndre Hunter. DeAndre Hunter has looked better since coming off the bench. Mm-hmm. I will say that. Quinn has maybe figured something out with Hunter coming off the bench. He's shooting the ball well with confidence. And he's playing okay. Maybe they found something with him, you know, coming off the bench. What do you think about that?
Well, everybody finds their role. Joe, the thing to think about when you're moved from a starter to a bench player, you know, coming in with the second unit, is you're playing against the other team's second unit. So naturally, it's not quite as much resistance as there is when you start. But Hunter gives you flashes, and you think that's why he was the fourth pick in the draft. But, the biggest knock on him is that he can't stay healthy. You know, he just misses so many games.
He does, and then he does.
At times, he seems disinterested.
Right.
But when he's focused and dialed in, he's very talented, and, you know, he was the fourth pick in the draft for a reason.
He's the fourth pick draft in 2019, no doubt. I absolutely agree with you. I do want to say this, too. Nick Claxton has really, really blossomed in the NBA. He's so happy for Slim, for my boy Slim Reaper. He has really, really developed into a solid NBA center. I selfishly wish he was an Atlanta Hawk. Boy. I would love to get Nick as a Hawk. Just saying.
Well, it's fun to see, you know, think about it. We first saw him when he was an 18-year-old freshman. And you're right, he really has blossomed into a very solid NBA big man.
My Nick Claxton, I got a Nick Claxton story. So it's my last day at Georgia, right? And the basketball team is out and about because Tom Crean was just hired as the new coach. So he's passing out pizza with the basketball team, and Nick is over there. And I walk over to Nick, and I'm like, hey, what's up, man? Can we grab a picture? And he said, sure. And I pull out my phone, and I'm getting ready to take a selfie, and he looks at me and goes, I got it. He stretches his long arm out. He and I take this picture, and I'm thinking, why didn't I just give him the phone to begin with?
Well, it certainly is easier when your arm's that long to get a good photo.
No doubt.
He's a good guy, and I wish him well, and I'm pulling for him when he's not, especially when he's not playing the Hawks.
No doubt. Always happy for Big Nick. Got nothing but great things to say about him. He was definitely a DGD for darn sure. Dad, we're going to move to some Atlanta Braves talk here really quick. And the Braves are off to a, kind of good start. I don't really keep up with a ton of spring training stats. I will say today they did beat the Philadelphia Phillies. And what we did see, we saw in Orlando Arcia, two-run homer. What are your thoughts about the shortstop, Mr. Arcia?
Well, he was the starting all-star shortstop in the National League last year.
Isn't that mind-boggling to think about?
It is. We let a shortstop leave. He was being paid $26 million, and our $2.5 million shortstop makes the all-star team. It's nuts. He's a solid player. As far as a hitter, he's probably, if you looked at the lineup, he's probably considered the lightest bat in the lineup, but he's still very capable. And as we saw today, he hit a dinger, and I've been impressed with him, and I'm really glad the Braves have him under contract for a couple more years.
Same here. Arcia's range has always been solid at shortstop. He has a rocket of a right throwing arm, and you're right, his bat is solid. When I think of Orlando, I think of that epic Thursday night game against the Mets. It was Georgia night, and I was out in center field, and the Braves and Mets, that game was a nip and tuck, but that was the game when they had the Hall of Famers in the booth, and it was just home run derby, and Arcia hit a big two-run homer to tie it. I think at like 10-10, I think. Arcia's got a flair for the dramatic, and I'm glad he's our shortstop, and I feel really good about where he is going forward.
Joe, that's part of a trend. You've seen, when you actually go to either the Hawks Arena or the Braves games in person, you seem to catch the close games that lead to extra innings or overtime.
No doubt.
If there's been a game with a lot with free baseball or free basketball, chances are Joe Colleen is in the house.
No doubt. I think back to that 2019 Epic Hawk overtime loss to the Bulls. I went to
that. How many overtimes?
Four overtimes.
Wow.
I went to that game with some buddies and my amazing girlfriend, Allie, and the Hawks took the L 161-168. Like, Trey Young had 49 that night. Zach LaVine had 47. It was incredible basketball to watch. And it was just glued from the very start. It was great. And then I think about that epic Braves-Mets game from last year. The Braves were in extra innings. And that's when Frank Hoyer dropped the line after when Ozzy hit the walk-off. Poor Larry a crown. I mean, it just doesn't get better than that. Dad, a couple more things about the Braves. We did hear some news about Ronald Acuña Jr. and his knee. Are you concerned about that?
Of course you're concerned. He's a young guy. His legs are a big part of his talent. He can really run, cover a lot of ground, steal a lot of bases, and but he's such a productive hitter. I could see this reducing the number of attempts of him trying to steal a base, and which is unfortunate because it's so much fun to watch. But the Braves are going to have to be prudent with him. He's way too young and way too talented to get him hurt, on the base pass.
Okay, here's the thing. I know a lot of people are panicking and freaking out, but I'm not. Because A, I trust the Braves medical staff, and B, everybody in the know seems to think that he'll be back. I even saw Acuña on Twitter that he was going to be back. So I'm not worried. And if Ronald does need to miss, a little bit, like, you know, maybe the series in Philly and Chicago, how they start the year, which, by the way, MLB scheduling again with the Phillies, and then we play the White Sox when it's freezing cold in April. That's ridiculous.
Well, it's sort of like the Bulldogs having to go to Kentucky.
Yeah.
Opening weekend.
That's stupid.
The Braves.
Stupid.
You know, I guess the Anchorage, Alaska team didn't have an opening on their schedule if they would have sent the Braves there.
You know what that makes me think of? It makes me think of, do you remember Georgia basketball played against the Alaska Anchorage?
Yeah.
In those exhibition games? You remember that? Alaska Anchorage. I'll never forget that.
And there were like three or four Anchorage fans in the
stands. Yeah. And I'm like, these people exist?
What are you doing here?
Yeah.
That was funny. Wild.
So anyway, going back to Ronald Acuna, I'm not necessarily worried about it. I think he's going to be just fine. If his numbers for, you know, 70 stolen bags are in jeopardy, that's fine. I just want him healthy. I want him ready. When I'm ready, when he's ready to go, I'm not necessarily worried
September.
About it.
Yeah.
I do want to say this about Chris Sale. Chris Sale's looked good through two spring training starts.
But again, you want him healthy in September.
I know.
You don't win anything in April and May.
A couple other bread nuggets I want to drop on you. Spencer Strider as a curveball.
Boy, as if it was fun hitting against him with two pitches. Now he's got three.
Can you imagine if he's able to really harness this?
Yeah, like how, the thing is, Joe, he really only has to throw a handful of them during the course of the game just to get in people's heads. He doesn't have to throw it, you know, 25% of the time. He throws it 5 to 10% of the time, but it plants the seed in the hitter's heads. It'll really go a long way.
I mean, holy smokes. If he's able to control that, and if he's able to utilize that, how dangerous he's going to be?
I agree.
I wonder if Max Fried might have taught him his curveball. Or Charlie Morton. I mean, those are two. If you're looking for guys to teach you how to throw a curveball, I'm looking at those two.
Well, when I hear the people talk about the Braves, Charlie Morton has really embraced the role of being a teacher and a, you know, a mentor to the younger player, especially the pitchers. And so I could very easily see Charlie Morton, you know, helping Spencer with his curveball.
I could too. Now, last week we talked about the bullpen and we talked about Jared Kelnick. This week I want to talk to you about the catchers behind the plate. And I also want to pick your brain about Ozzie Albies and Matt Olson. So we'll start with the catchers behind the plate. How do you feel about Sean Murphy going into year two?
Well, I think he had a terrific year one. He kind of faded in the second half of the season going into the playoffs. But I think in general the Braves were very happy. He hit over 20 home runs and you know, is a very solid defensive catcher. Nobody's ever going to complain about him, his defense.
No doubt.
I kind of like him. What did you think?
Again, National League All-Star. All-Star starting catcher right there, baby.
So you were pleased with his
first absolutely.
Season?
Absolutely. I think a lot of Atlanta fans, when they made the move, they were like, who the heck is this guy? Because he was in Oakland. Again, Oakland might as well be on the other side of the galaxy. I mean, if you think about Oakland A's baseball, it might as well be on the other side of the world. Murphy coming over here, I think a lot of people just weren't really sure what we had in Sean Murphy, but he was phenomenal. Defensively, you know, A+ with the glove, A+ with his throwing arm, and you're right, his bat was clutch. And you think about Darno's just as steady Eddie as it gets. He's as steady Eddie as it gets. I feel really good about the Braves catching situation. Couple follow-ups. How do you feel about Ozzie Albies going into the year over at second base? How do you feel about Ozzie?
Well, I think he's a terrific player. He has a lot more pop in his bat than you would expect, you know, given his size. But I'm real happy with Ozzie, and I'm glad he's, you know, going to be with the Braves for a long time. I mean, he's terrific. What do you think?
I'm feeling excited about Ozzie Albies. I think think we could see Ozzie take a leadership role this year. I think he and Riley could be the two leaders on the team. I think as of now, I think Ozzie is the longest tenured regular position player on the Braves right now. Because people forget Ozzie got called up a year before Ronnie Rockets did. A lot of people forget that. Because Ozzie came up in 17, Ronnie Rockets came up in 18. But anyway, I feel great about Ozzie. Again, if Ozzie stays healthy, Ozzie could get you, you know, 20 home runs and hit 277 to 278, 280. If he hits 280 with 20 bombs, I'll take that all day long.
All day long.
And again, I think Ozzie should be in the two hole. I think your Braves lineup, your first four could look something like this. Ronnie Rockets, Ozzie Albies. You got Austin Riley at third, hitting third. Matt Olson hitting fourth. That right there could be the most dynamic foursome in all Major League Baseball.
Got no problem with that, Joe. Wouldn't want to be the pitcher, you know, who's trying to settle in at the start of a game and you got to face that crew.
Nah, player.
Because they've started a fair number of games with the big first inning, the starting pitcher out of the water.
And then you think about Matt Olson, the final guy we're going to talk about when it comes to the Braves. How do you feel about Mr. Matt going into year three for the Braves?
Well, last year was tremendous. I mean, you can't ever expect somebody to hit 52 home runs, but he's a big, strong guy, and if he gets into it, it's going to go. So I'd still like to see his defense smooth out a little bit, but offensively, I got no problem with Matt.
I think he's getting better, you know, throughout spring and throughout the regular season. I know a lot of people were kind of up and down with his glove, but I think he's going to be fine over at first. And then offensively, I mean, he's ridiculous. But you're right. I think if people think he's going to bash 54 this year, I think that may be a little bit of unrealistic expectations. If he hits you, you know, 38 to 40, I think that's more reasonable.
And it sure makes it easier for Austin Riley hitting
no
30.
No doubt. That protection, that 3-4, holy smokes.
Yeah.
Actually, while we're on that subject, let's talk about Riley for one quick second. How do you feel about Mr. Riley going in?
I think he's just going to continue to get better and better. I feel real good about having him in the middle of the order. His defense has been a pleasant surprise. I didn't expect him to be as solid as he is. Now, he attributed a lot of that to working with Ron Washington, who's gone this year. But hopefully the lessons that Washington taught will be carried out on going forward.
Do you think Riley could be a dark horse candidate to win MVP?
Well, he certainly has the ability to. We'll just have to see, you know, how it all plays out. I mean, this is a lineup that is so deep. You know, it might be harder to stand out, but Acuna did last year.
Yeah, no doubt.
Certainly Riley could this year.
What Riley's doing, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but he kind of gives me a little bit of chipper vibes. A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit. You know, the clutch factor, you know, big stick, you know, his glove is solid. I know Riley doesn't have a gold glove yet, and I know Chipper won several of those in his career. But I think power-wise, he may be right up there with Chipper. I heard Chipper Jones on an Atlanta radio station earlier this week, and Chipper said, they asked him about him and Riley, and Chipper said that he thinks home run-wise, he thinks Riley is better than he was at this time. But that RBI-wise and, you know, stolen base-wise and all those other things, that Chipper's got him beat. But he feels really good about where Riley is going, and sky's the limit for number 27. I just can't wait for the Braves. I'm so excited.
It should be a lot of fun, Jeff.
It's going to be a fun team. Well, Dad, thank you so much for coming on the show this week, talking some UGA athletics, talking some Atlanta Braves baseball, talking about the incredible job by Caitlin Clark, all that, and just enjoy another good conversation.
It was a lot of fun, Joe, and congratulations again to you and all the people from Monsignor Donovan on a first state basketball crown. That's terrific.
That really is cool.
And to know that your class kind of started the foundation, that's great.
Long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. In a galaxy far, far away.
Okay, Skywalker.
So, Dad, thanks again. Now, guys, I want to tell you about FanFrostSeasons.com. It's our website where you can go, where you can check out our merchandise store, going in the shop merch tab, where you got your hoodies, your Comfy Colors t-shirts, you've got our alternate logo shirts in white and black. Get all your merchandise needs met at the FanFrostSeasons merchandise store, going in the shop merch tab. If you like this podcast, you can find us on any major podcast platform. Give us a like, give us a follow. That's FanFrostSeasons. Remember, you can find us on any major podcast platform. Give us a like, give us a follow. And now, guys, it's time to get one last word from our sponsor this week. And Fan for All Seasons is brought to you in part by Georgia Smoke Barbecue, authentic original oak smoked barbecue catering. You can learn more at georgiasmoke.com. So for my dad, this has been Jamin Joe, and this has been another exciting installment of the Fan for All Seasons podcast. We'll talk to you guys next week. See ya.